The Wizard, Sion, Volume 1, Troll Song, by Owen Tyme. This is a work of fiction. Similarities to real people, places, or events are entirely coincidental. Copyright 2024, Owen Tyme. Prologue. Winston was the world's leading history minor. He was an old dwarf, and the hair of his beard was streaked with gray and white, though it was still mostly brown with a hint of red. Under normal circumstances, his beard would have reached all the way to his belt, but it was tucked inside his coat because he didn't want it to catch frost. Despite the heavy clothing protecting him against the biting cold of the Arctic, his broad and muscular frame was obvious, making his heavy coat look poorly tailored, even though it had been custom-made. Since his primary area of study as a history minor was the Sky Children, he'd spent a lifetime tracking small clues, looking for every outpost of the ancient people he could find, and as a result, he stood next to a wall of clear ice in an ice cave. After months of careful excavation through the glacier using magic weapons known as blasters set to produce heat, along with pumping the melt water out, he'd come to an amazing find of immeasurable historic value, and his whole frame practically tingled with scholarly excitement. He'd been fully expecting the old outpost, which had been the reason for the expedition, and three of his best apprentices were each leading their own teams, aiming for different doors, since their soundings had produced a fairly clear map. Some had already reported seeing the fortress through the ice. However, what he'd never expected to find was a frozen troll woman, let alone two of them, surrounded by a handful of hideously ugly and mutated males. All but one were huddled against the walls of the outpost, probably in a vain attempt to protect themselves from the avalanche that buried it. The exception was lying prone. Her face was badly damaged, and one of her arms was stretched toward the edge of the ice, as if she were yearning for something just out of reach. She wore plate armor, but the woman's snow-white hair was a dead giveaway that she was a troll, at least if the history books were accurate. He shut down his weapon, lowered it, and raised his goggles to get a better look, his eyes lighting up like a kid at Christmas. Historians only very rarely have the chance to examine the bodies of perfectly preserved individuals from historic eras, let alone multiple examples of an extinct race. He was looking forward to getting a doctor involved to do a full study on both the males and the females. With the way they were frozen, there would surely be a treasure trove of information about the troll race. Unfortunately, he'd gone too far, and one of the dead woman's fingers was exposed almost to the second knuckle. Winston worried about contamination of his find, but the damage was already done. On the other hand, he reasoned the digit would probably freeze again soon, preventing further contamination of the find. Barely able to contain his excitement, he shouted,
"Everyone, you have got to see this."
Within 10 minutes, a dozen of his apprentices had gathered in the damp, freezing cave, while Winston gave an impromptu lecture on the history of the Troll War, during which the trolls had been wiped out by the dwarves. Behind his back, and seen by no one, the exposed finger twitched. Part 1. Extinction. Chapter 1. Sisters. Roughly 2,000 years earlier. Three women in white leather stood on top of a hill lit by starlight. Below the hill, hidden among the trees of the forest, dark figures about the size of humans marched, appearing ugly to a man with long, greasy, black hair, big noses, and large eyes. In the distance was a fortress on another hill, constructed of stone and wood. The wind was tossing the long, wavy, white hair of the first in a lively way. Her body could easily have been described as petite, for she was short and slender, smaller than the other two, though definitely an adult. She faced the wind, staring into the distance. Her armor's neckline was cut low, seemingly designed to draw attention to her ample cleavage rather than to protect, a choice calculated to distract. All but one of her features made her look young and vibrant, but her piercing blue eyes told another, far longer tale of experience and hardship, while the intensity of them betrayed a deep level of concentration. The hilt of the broadsword on her belt was decorated with silver, which glittered in the starlight, looking well cared for and polished, though it had seen little use. The second was taller and more muscular than the first. Her snow-white hair was cut so short it stood on end, all over her scalp. Her scarred armor was battered, dirty, and stained with old blood, appearing as an equal mixture of her own and others, though she bore no scars. Where the armor hadn't been torn, it covered her full body, save only her head. She idly toyed with a stained and battle-scarred, dark, wooden mask in one hand, while impatiently bouncing one foot on a large, cracked stone. She also stared into the distance. On her belt were a pair of short swords, the hilts showing every sign of neglect, as the silver decorations were tarnished. An evil smile played on her darkly stained lips. She had one green eye, one blue. The skin of her face was two-toned, pale on the blue-eyed side and slightly darker on the green-eyed side, as though a pair of sisters had been cut in half, then joined together down the middle. One could only speculate on what happened to the leftovers. Aside from age, height, and her hair, the third was the spitting image of the first. She was clearly a teenager, no more than 16 years old, about an inch taller, and her hair bore the most unusual pattern of white, gray, and black. All of her hair was snow white at the root, slowly transitioning to gray, then black for the last few inches, hanging to her shoulders, hinting at a change that was long since complete in the other two. It should be noted the white and gray shades, in this case, bore not the slightest sign of aging, and her hair appeared healthy. Her armor was modest and designed for protection. On her belt were a pair of daggers, complete with silver decorations. She frowned, looking ill at ease as she followed the gaze of the others. The similarity in features marked the trio as sisters. The second, speaking to the first, demanded,
"Ida, why are you always so slow to strike? Just attack and be done with them."
Ida responded calmly,
"Strategy, Nicole. Dwarves are schemers. For everyone you see, there's 20 more waiting in ambush, with deep tunnels."
"It's Nikki."
Nicole corrected, then added,
"If we catch them by surprise and raise the fort, it'll collapse on their little heads."
She laughed. The youngest sister pointed out,
"Nikki."
Rounding on the young woman faster than her eye could follow, Nicole's swords were drawn and crossed against the teen's throat. Unlike everything else about them, the blades were in fine condition, honed to a razor's edge. Blood trickled from a slight cut, rolling down one blade. After an impossibly long moment, the wooden mask Nicole had been toying with hit the cracked stone and tumbled to the ground.
"You don't call me Nikki, Lyra,"
Nicole menaced.
"You haven't earned that yet."
Fearing losing her head, Lyra nodded very slightly. The swords were withdrawn, and Lyra's wound vanished without a trace, aside from the drop of blood trickling down her neck. Nicole turned away, and the blood was licked off before she sheathed her swords, commenting,
"The young are always so tasty."
Lyra shuddered. Ida shook her head, but continued to focus.
"Lyra, what were you saying? I'm interested in your thoughts."
Lyra wiped the blood from her throat with a handkerchief and spoke hesitantly.
"Stone doesn't burn, so what good does it do to set fire to a stone fort?"
Ida smiled.
"Correct, but Nicole..."
"Nikki."
Nicole hissed.
"Is also correct. While it's a stone fort, it's supported by wood. The rooms will also be decorated with rugs and wooden furniture. While dwarves prefer to build with stone, it's rather chilly, so they construct their furniture of wood, then decorate with rugs and large tapestries. It is possible to set fire to and collapse a stone fortification, but it's not as easy as Nicole would have you believe. Besides, we're here for a purpose. If we destroy the fort, we can't search it for the map."
Nicole grumbled, both at her sister's words and her refusal to call her Nikki, eventually asking,
"So, what's the plan, Ida?"
Ida responded,
You will command 1/4 of our force for a diversionary assault. Choose a weak point and do as much damage as you can. Use the usual strategy, 2 groups, assault and reserve, switch as needed.
Nicole smiled in a predatory fashion.
This will be fun.
Lyra, you will watch and observe through Sung this time.
I'd ordered.
Next time, you will command a few of our troops.
Yes, sister.
Lyra moved to stand beside Ida, who put a hand on her shoulder. Ida took a deep breath and closed her eyes. She began to sing in a delicate but flawless soprano. After a moment to listen to the pattern of the unplanned, wordless tune, Nicole picked up the beat and began to sing in a deep alto voice, harmoniously producing a counterpoint melody with double the number of beats per minute. Nicole's melody was a battle song, with Ida's serene tune rapidly becoming a background to it. The combination brought to Lyra's mind a tranquil spring scene trampled by soldiers marching to war. Lyra studied the 2 patterns, finding the overall song undeniably beautiful. Once she heard the combined song repeat, she began to sing on a short delay, carrying the primary melody in her own high alto. In a moment, the tune began to wash through Lyra, working its way into every corner of her mind, establishing a telepathic link with her sisters and the soldiers. After a moment, the soldiers raised their voices in song via the telepathic link, a chorus of 500,000 tenors and basses. They weren't skilled singers, barely able to sing in step with each other, but after a few repeats of the song, they reached a pleasing union with the 3 sisters, the whole transcending the sum of its parts. Lyra wept freely for the allure of the song. She could hear her sister's lyrics in the telepathic link, exchanging detailed strategic and tactical information on how to proceed. 1/4 of the men suddenly shifted from Ida's song to instead sing Nicole's counterpoint. Within a few repeats, they had the tune down and were singing harmoniously with her. With the telepathic connections firmly established, Nicole donned her mask, drew her swords, and rushed down the hill, still singing, fully prepared to fight at the same time. Her physical voice might falter, but so long as Ida served as a physical anchor, Nicole's telepathic song could continue. Lyra was overcome with thoughts and impressions hitting her mind all at once, and her voice began to falter. Ida commanded, aloud, still singing.
Hold the tune. Let it happen.
Lyra closed her eyes and refocused her mind on maintaining the tune. Suddenly, she was down below with the soldiers, her brothers, walking beside them. She felt the heft of a mace in her hand and the shield strapped to her other arm. The scavenged chainmail armor was heavy, but reassuring. The army marched in step with a beat. She knew without a doubt she was a much-loved brother and soldier of the Siren Sisters in the fiercest army on the continent. She knew how to use the mace in her hand and remembered smashing the skulls of goblins, humans, dwarves, and even once an ogre. With the attention of her sisters on leading, Lyra managed to conceal the disgust she felt, and her mind flitted elsewhere, repulsed by her brother's thoughts. Suddenly, she was another, standing nearly a head taller than the rest. Her plate armor had been fashioned from that worn by 3 dead dwarves. As she considered the armor, she fondly remembered stripping the corpses and spending hours at the captured forge, repairing and reworking the armor for a good fit, despite the fearful heat of the fire. Again, she recoiled, the image of the dwarf corpses stinging her conscience. She briefly became one of the shortest, a runt with a belligerent, vicious streak a mile long to make up for her lack of stature. She knew her name was Pavlos. She was favored by Nicole and loved her dearly, her favorite of the sisters. Nicole's favor kept her out of the worst battles, but Nicole made it up to her by sending her on many important solo missions. She could still remember the taste of the blood of the king she guided her to on her last mission. She reveled in the taste. Lyra quickly forced her attention elsewhere, knowing the king's dying expression and the taste of his blood would haunt her dreams for days. Seeing her difficulty, but failing to comprehend it, due to her divided focus, Ida commanded,
"Rise. Rise above the soldiers."
Lyra redoubled her focus, seeking to let go of the thoughts and minds of the army, setting her mind on Ida's voice in the link. For an instant, she could see through the eyes of hundreds all at once, like seeing through the multifaceted eyes of an inset. She pushed harder, and eventually it was able to ride the currents of the song, like a surfer on an enormous wave that was poised to envelop an entire coastal city. She looked at the world through Ida's perspective. Her oldest sister was simultaneously aware of and seen through the eyes of all the soldiers not under the command of Nicole, three-quarters of the army. It was incredible the way she was using the minds of the soldiers to expand her own awareness, using them to process information she couldn't possibly have processed alone. For one brief instant, Lyra knew the names, personal histories, current emotional status, and could feel the bodies of her brothers under Ida's command. It was genius-level control, requiring a mind balanced on a razor's edge, adjusting moment by moment to every fact presented to her. Only a cold, nearly emotionless individual like Ida could have pulled it off. Just as soon as she grasped it all, it was gone, and suddenly Lyra was dangling over a pit of darkness filled with voices crying out with despair. Hundreds or possibly thousands of voices cried out to her, begging and pleading for justice, help, or simple recognition. There were too many voices, too many different threads of consciousness, and Lyra couldn't even begin to distinguish them from each other because she was drowning in a torrent of chaotic, mixing thoughts. Having lost the moment of balance, Lyra was forcibly ejected from Ida's mind, finding herself with a tremendous headache and her mind full of competing whispers, all struggling to be heard. Having seen the world through her sister's eyes, Lyra had no doubt Ida's nickname, Thousand Eyes, was well earned.
"That was impressive for a first try,"
Ida gave a rare compliment and then warned,
"But stay out of my subconscious. Now, observe Nicole."
Lyra waited for the song to repeat, dropping her echo of Ida to instead echo Nicole. She had some difficulty the first time through, due to the faster pace, almost losing her telepathic connection, but she managed the song flawlessly from then on. Lyra used her recent experience to ignore the soldiers, instead focusing on Nicole, to peer out at the world through the eye slits of her mask. She was running at high speed past the soldiers to lead them from the front line while simultaneously giving them instructions. Where Ida gave personal attention to each soldier, Nicole gave general orders and shared a portion of her mind with them, imparting her impressive set of skills to them. Lyra suddenly knew her sister's thoughts and feelings, surprised in the moment that her abusive older sister actually did love her in a twisted fashion. The word mind rang through Lyra's head forcefully as she remembered beating a dwarf to death with her bare hands for daring to touch her kid sister. Nicole's thoughts rang back, questioning,
"Abusive? Twisted?"
Lyra was hit by a wave of amusement from her sister. Shocked by the sudden question and cruelty, Lyra reversed the connection, and very briefly, Nicole knew how abusive her behavior had been, feeling something akin to remorse for the first time in many years. Nicole slowed before she reached the front line, momentarily confused by the mixture of her own and Lyra's feelings. Her song faltered, and her men became confused. Ida commanded urgently,
"Focus. Both of you."
Nicole turned her full mind to the battle ahead, restoring the song, ignoring Lyra's presence behind her eyes. Lyra let her own feelings go, returning to observing her sister's assault without interfering. Moving with the stealthy skill of a trained assassin, just like Nicole, the assault force maneuvered quickly to the back wall of the fortress, where there was some damage from a recent earthquake. The cracked walls gave plenty of hand holds. Climbing like silent spiders, the lightly armored leading edge of the force scaled the wall, practically walking up it. Nicole, the first to the top, dangled by one hand and drew a sword. To Lyra's surprise, Nicole projected her thoughts outward, using the song to sense nearby minds. She had no interest in touching them, but was only trying to sense their presence. The connection was weak, but Lyra was curious. She pushed hard to touch one of the dwarf minds, finding it almost impossible, as if there was some form of interference. When she broke through, she suddenly knew what it was to be a dwarf guard, walking the walls, watching for enemies. She knew her name was Lollin, and she was soon lost in the mind of the dwarf, joyfully exploring his thoughts and memories, having never touched such a light, pleasant mind. Lollin was tired, thinking of his wife and children, looking forward to the end of the shift, when he could have breakfast with them. He wanted to comb his beard before bed and felt immense pride in caring for it.
As Father said, a dwarf's beard is his pride and joy.
He rounded a corner of the wall and came to the damaged section. As ordered, he examined it for further signs of instability as part of his duties. He leaned against the outer parapet while staring at the inner one, which was in a worse state. One light kick would probably knock a whole section out. As he got comfortable to make note of any degradation in the wall, a feminine but very strong hand reached around him from behind with a sword in hand and quickly slashed his throat before he could cry out. Flipping end over end, a woman in a wooden mask slipped silently over the wall and tipped Lollin off, treating the whole affair like a wee exchange, finishing the maneuver with a solid kick to the dwarf's face, which caused him to lose his tenuous grip on the wall. As he fell, he noted just a hint of the woman's voice, producing something akin to a soft drum beat. Lollin covered his bleeding throat and tried to scream, but wasn't able to produce anything other than a quiet gurgle. Lyra's throat was cut. She knew someone was attacking the fort, but couldn't raise the alarm. While she struggled to breathe, a woman wearing a mask and battered leather armor acrobatically rolled over the parapet and then kicked Lyra in the face, forcing her over the edge. As she fell, seeing the ground rush up to end her life, she continued to try to shout for the other guards to hear, hoping to make something of her final action in the world. Lyra's singing failed as Lollin died. Overcome with a confused mixture of her own disgust at Nicole's actions and the dying feelings of Lollin, she collapsed to the grass, clutching her throat, unable to sing. She knew in that moment, beyond a shadow of a doubt, she needed to escape from her sisters. There was a whole wide world of beauty out there, and her experience with Lollin made her crave exploring it. She wanted to try raising a family instead of an army. She even wanted to try growing a beard. Lyra shook the last traces of Lollum's thoughts from her conscious mind and tapped his memories away for the future. As far as she could tell, she didn't have much of his memories left because they were fading like a dream, but the strongest were of his time with family and for some reason she couldn't remember of looking in a mirror to comb his beard. She'd often thought of running away because Nicole was cruel at the best of times and Ida did nothing to protect her from the daily physical and emotional abuse. She loved her sisters, but knew her relationship with them was unhealthy by comparison to Lollum's loving relationship with his wife and the way their children interacted, looking after each other. She wished she could help the dwarves somehow. Despite Ida's verbally sung orders and eventual protests, Lyra didn't dare rejoin the song. If Nicole ever knew her thoughts of escape, she would be murdered, while Ida looked on in approval. Instead, she watched from the hill as the fortress was sacked, helpless to do anything about it. She kept her face calm and emotionless, dying on the inside with each dwarf murdered, sick with disgust and racked by powerless guilt. As the night wore on toward morning, she formed the beginnings of a plan for escape and a plausible excuse to avoid joining the song ever again. Chapter 2 Crime. The battle was won and the Siren Sisters held the fort. Of the 2 million dwarves that had lived in the tunnels, only a small handful still breathed. Each was a leader, since Nicole spared the lives of no one else, not even women and children. From the awful look of glee on the woman's face, Lyra could tell she'd enjoyed the battle immensely. Nicole's armor had many fresh blood stains, and only one of them was her own. Not that it made a difference. They were in the former commander's office. Since it was a trade fort, the ceilings above ground were high, enough for human comfort. Ida sat at the commander's desk, rifling through the papers and books in the drawers. She seemed to be idly humming, but Lyra had no doubt she was maintaining a connection with the soldiers searching the fort for the map. With her meticulous attention to detail, no stone would be left unturned until she had a clue of the map's location or an idea of some other fortress to search. Her nickname, Thousand Eyes, bore a double meaning. She would miss no detail in such a search and had a talent for finding secret doors and hidden compartments. Ida began extracting the drawers from the desk, feeling for hidden compartments while neatly setting the contents aside without making a mess. When she finished with the desk, her search of the office was complete. She turned her attention to Lyra, asking,
"Why did you not rejoin the song?"
Lyra told the first part of her concocted story.
"I connected with the mind of a dwarf right before Nicole killed him. I was lost in his mind when he died."
For once, Ida showed some emotion, namely surprise.
"A dwarf, you say? No troll has ever managed that."
Lyra nodded.
"When his throat was cut, I felt it."
She began her lies.
"I couldn't concentrate to sing after that."
Ida nodded.
"A near-death experience threw you off the beat. Understandable."
She commended.
"Try now."
Ida began to sing instead of hum. Lyra listened to the song and picked up the tune, joining her as an echo. She did everything in her power to resist the telepathic connection, shutting herself off from her sister. The remnants of Lollum helped, much to her surprise. She found her mind withdrawing into the memories of the dwarf instead of opening up, safely cocooned in the minutiae of his life. To her shock, it was almost as though he were inside her, whole and complete. She clearly knew his thoughts and goals for the future. He'd been working as a guard to afford tools for his own forge. After a lack of success, Ida commented, still singing,
"Your song is tainted with dwarven stubbornness. I'm not sure how, but it will probably prevent us from linking for the time being. Until it passes, you may find it easier to link with dwarves, however."
To one side of the room, Nicole stopped twirling in the swiveling chair of the base commander's adjutant, asking,
"Let me try, Ida."
Nicole's eyes lit up with cruel delight.
"I've more experience with difficult minds."
"Leave her be."
Ida shook her head.
"The condition will pass in time. Besides, your methods rarely leave the mind intact."
Defeated, Nicole shrugged.
"Can I start interrogating the dwarves, then?"
Ida nodded, and they walked the halls of the fort until they entered the dungeon. There were a large number of cells intended for holding criminals and prisoners of war. The main chamber was a deep shaft, separate from the rest of the fort, with the only entrances at the top level, for the sake of security. There were enough cells for at least 30,000 prisoners. Many were occupied by goblins, captured in a recent raid on a goblin stronghold. They would be left to rot when the fort was abandoned, because goblins made poor rations for the soldiers, worse than eating rats. The top level was occupied by the dwarven leaders, which were being observed by soldiers under Ida's watchful eye. Nicole began to sing counterpoint to Ida's song, and a few of the soldiers brought out a dwarf. He was strapped into a chair that had been modified using a handful of dwarf belts and some nails. There was a strap for each arm and leg, as well as one each for the neck and torso. Once the dwarf was immobilized, Nicole began humming instead of singing. Standing well away, Lyra could feel the powerful push of Nicole's mind as she sought to break his will. The troll woman couldn't enter his mind, but she could forcefully push thoughts into him.
"Obey. Do as you're told, slave. Tell us what you know.
Lyra reeled at the power of Nicole's will. The dwarf started to sweat and tremble, clearly in immense pain caused by the stress of remaining silent in the face of her demands. Within 10 minutes, his lips began moving of their own accord, and shortly after, he reluctantly answered questions, looking horrified by his own words. Nicole demanded,
"Where do your people hide their greatest secrets?"
She followed up by humming, telepathically demanding,
"Answer me."
I don't know.
The dwarf was wide-eyed with surprise at his own words.
"If you don't know, then who would?"
Nicole growled and then telepathically shouted,
"Speak the truth."
Ko. Con. Enter. Tie. All.
The dwarf spoke through clenched teeth, in a vain effort to prevent himself from speaking, but as soon as he'd spoken the words, he started to sob. Nicole stopped humming and spoke in a stage whisper into his ear, clearly intending her words to carry to the other prisoners.
"Then you're of no more use to me."
More loudly, she turned to one of the male trolls and ordered,
"Throw him down the shaft."
4 trolls took control of the dwarf's limbs as they unbuckled him from the torture chair and tossed his struggling form over the edge of the railing, while Nicole peered over the edge, her face filling with glee as she watched the poor fellow fall to his doom, screaming the whole way down until he hit bottom. Lyra tried to keep her face stony, sure any sign of weakness would result in her death, but she felt nothing but contempt for her sister's actions. Laughing like it was the funniest thing she'd ever seen, she turned to the prisoners and asked, with a wink, because she already knew the answer to her question,
"Which one of you is Commander Tybold?"
Predictably, the dwarves remained silent, so Nicole gave them a sick grin.
"Can I have a volunteer from the audience?"
Again, the dwarves were silent, so Nicole picked another prisoner at random, breaking him just like the first, but ultimately getting very little out of him because he wasn't high enough rank to know the secrets Nicole was after. When she was done with him, he was disposed of like the first. Another was randomly chosen, and Nicole repeated the process yet again. With each dwarf killed, Lyra felt terrible guilt and shame for standing by, doing nothing. Nicole, having enjoyed the expressions of the rest of the prisoners during the pointless interrogations, was about to pick another low-ranking officer to continue the game. Ida interrupted to calmly remind her,
"This isn't about satisfying you."
Nicole nodded and grinned evilly. The commander of the fort was dragged out, kicking and punching. Nicole laughed as one of her men got a little too close to the dwarf, who bit him on the thigh, resulting in a cry of pain just before they managed to force the dwarf into the torture chair. The bleeding troll punched the dwarf in the gut in retribution, then backed away as the dwarf smiled defiantly and spat out some troll blood.
"Yek ye taste foul."
Lyra was impressed by his fighting spirit and mental fortitude as he withstood Nicole's torturous telepathic shouting for 3 hours straight. In the end, he began to sweat, but not tremble, demonstrating the surprising extent of his stubborn, formidable will. Nicole loved torture of all kinds, but the long session had clearly been too long for her liking. She drew a sword, raised it to swing, and Lyra knew the commander had beaten her in a battle of his will against her patience. Before she could complete the rash action, Ida stepped in the way, catching Nicole's wrist. The sisters struggled for a moment, and as their eyes met, Nicole backed down. Behind Ida, the dwarf grinned at Nicole, a mocking look of victory on his face. Ida turned and looked at Lyra, pointing with her head for Nicole's sake, who calmed down and sheathed her sword.
"Good idea, sister,"
Ida invited.
"Lyra, since you've had success with one dwarf, perhaps you can reach another."
Lyra stepped up, seeing little choice. She began to sing her own song, a simple forlorn tune she thought she made up in the moment. She did nothing but sing wordlessly for a time, staring in the dwarf's eyes. She didn't invade his mind, but instead invited him into her own. Stepping back, Nicole whispered to Ida,
"Pull instead of push. Interesting."
Ida nodded, whispering back,
"She has more potential than I did at her age. She was able to echo my mind and see everything for just an instant before the immensity of it made her falter and she slipped into my subconscious by accident. All she lacks is confidence."
Nicole shuddered, thinking of the only occasion in which the two of them had fought for real, all over the sick contents of Ida's subconscious. She quickly pushed the thought from her mind, because some abominations were best left buried and undisturbed. However, when she thought about Lyra managing to echo Ida's mind-splitting technique, she had to admit she was impressed.
"I've never been able to echo you."
Ida shrugged.
"You have your own talents. You push your will and skills. I pull information and Lyra is a prodigy, able to do both well, needing only practice."
None of their words were heard by anyone else. Caught up in the song, Lyra found herself singing words she barely understood in a language she didn't recognize as images flashed through her mind of drinking with friends and toasting fallen heroes. Somehow, she knew she was singing a dwarf song of mourning, but also of hard-won victory. It was a song that embodied what it meant to be a dwarf, capable of touching the heart of even the abused and battle-worn prisoners. The dwarves, stunned by the sudden change in tactics, expecting to be pushed to give up their secrets, instead found themselves weeping at the beauty of the girl's talent and the sadness emanating from her, beyond anything any of them had ever experienced. Lyra reached out with her mind to the dwarf commander, forming a connection. His eyes went wide with astonishment as he came to know her life story, learning the memories she shared, showing him images of abuse at Nicole's hands. When she was done, he nodded in comprehension of what she was trying to do and dropped his defenses, willingly letting her in. Lyra knew the commander's life. She was tougher than the stone she cut from the mountains and prided herself on always acting with honesty and integrity. She knew her name was Tybold, and she was commander of millions of fallen dwarves, determined to take the last of her secrets to the grave, resolute in her single-minded desire to prevent the troll women from taking her hidden treasures. She used a dwarf word she didn't understand to refer to the women, but she knew it roughly meant female dog. Most of all, she hated the trolls for invading her fortress and killing her men, hated how ugly the males were and, by contrast, how alluring and beautiful the female dog women were. She'd never before realized how ugly troll men were, having always taken their appearance as normal. In particular, she hated Nicole for having spent 3 hours telepathically shouting at her mind, causing extreme pain for every thought of resisting the female dog's will. With a two-way link established, Lyra and the dwarf were able to freely share thoughts. Tybold began,
"We have so much time. Me wants to help you mislead your female dog sisters. Can you save me men if me helps? If they try to force me again, they may break me. Your female dog sister nearly broke me several times."
"No."
Lyra responded,
"I can't save your man, but if I give my sisters a solid seeming lead to what they're looking for, they'll kill your men quickly instead of interrogating them to death. That's what they've done in the past. Nicole may still torture some of them, but for fun instead of information."
We can see the truths of your words in your memories. What are they looking for?"
Tybold asked.
"They are looking for a map that would lead to relics from the time of the Sky Children. The map would be contained in a small device able to project images in the air. We've read of it in several sources, some dating to a few years after the cataclysm at the Sky God's Wrath. They want to find a great weapon, built and hidden away by the last of the Sky Children."
Lyra explained. Tybold inquired,
"What weapon?"
"Ida calls it a dancing ghost. I don't know any more than that."
Lyra admitted. The dwarf asked,
"What can he do to help?"
Tell me your best guess as to the location of the map so I can make sure to keep them away. If all else fails, I can run away to find it myself and hide it somewhere they'll never find it. Then help me come up with a plausible location to take them to. That's completely wrong. You'll have to give up one of your secrets so they'll believe I broke you.
Lyra suggested.
Aye. You may find it far to the north, in an Arctic fortress. If ye take it from there, go far to the east of here to the sky plains. Me as Kenner. Ye can ask them to bury it. No one will ever know the map was stolen and moved, but in time, the miners in the sky plains may uncover it again, hopefully long after your sisters are dust. They'll be digging sky metal from the ground there for thousands of years to come.
He instructed.
Thank you. Now, how can I mislead them?
Lyra requested. In the shared mindscape, Tybold laughed.
Take them south. The Order of the Dawn, a group of wizards, are living in a tower of sky metal, like the sky children would build. Tell them it's where methinks the map may be. There's others of Mykinir there, with an even greater force than me commanded here. Between the wizards and Mykin, your sisters will fall.
I wish I could save you and your men.
Lyra lamented.
But me thanks ye for saving most of me's secrets. Now for your prize, to convince them ye broke me. The least of me hidden jewels is in shaft 3 of the mines, level 45, corridor J. It ends in a collapse, a clever ruse. One boulder among the hundreds covers a hidden tunnel, leading to me smallest hoard. Good luck to ye, and keep your female dog sisters away from that map.
Lyra disentangled herself from Tybalt's mind, coming away with certain knowledge of the map's likely location in the north and the home of the Order of the Dawn to the south. She also had an image of the sky plains, a desolate, rocky landscape, but deep underneath, an entire city of twisted, ancient metal, all half-melted into strange shapes. Tybalt looked down as though defeated, crying,
"Ye."
He said the word he'd been using, meaning female dog.
Trollop, how dare ye enter me mine and steal me secrets?
He struggled against the straps of the chair in vain and hurled insults. Amused, Nicole sang, pushing her will on the old dwarf until he was quiet. I'd asked.
What have you gotten out of him?
2 things,
Lyra answered.
There's a local treasure cache we can search for, to confirm I broke him, and a location I should be able to point out on a map. His best guess as to where the map device is, the Tower of the Sky Children.
For once, Nicole showed Lyra some respect, slapping her on the back.
Good job. Keep it up, and I may just stop beating you.
She laughed, nastily. One of the males unrolled a map of the fortress on a convenient table. After studying it for a time, Lyra knew she'd seen it many times, then shook her head, realizing that was a remnant of memory from Tybalt. She followed the careful labels and marked a spot, explaining,
"The cache is hidden behind one boulder among hundreds, so some work will be required."
Ida hummed to give orders to the men. The male unrolled another map, a rough sketch of the continent, spanning from the Arctic all the way to the warm lands of the south. Lyra marked the spot where the Order of the Dawn was and took note of the location far to the north, trying to burn nearby landmarks into her memory. She also noted the large area of the map labeled as Sky Plains. When the cache was found, most of the dwarves were thrown into the main shaft. Tybalt looked on in grim horror, but gave a very slight nod to Lyra. 3 were chosen by Nicole for her perverse game to be tortured to death in front of Tybalt, who she never touched again, instead leaving him strapped in to die of thirst. Lyra wanted to end the game, to save the dwarves, but there was nothing she could do without tipping her hand. Even so, she knew she'd be haunted by the inventive cruelty of her sister. She could control her facial expressions, but her conscience ate her alive. After that day, Tybalt's memory of being telepathically tortured by Nicole surfaced in her mind whenever she saw the female dog. She knew it was a remnant, but she never put it away, instead using the memory to bolster her will to thwart her sisters and escape. The last vestiges of love she held in her heart for her sisters soured and was lost in the coming days. She knew it was the influence of the two dwarf minds, but she didn't care. She knew Tybalt's character was beyond reproach, and by comparison, Nicole was a remorseless demon from the nether pits. Ida wasn't much better, still cruel, but always as the means to an end rather than for pleasure. When the army marched out of the fortress, Lyra was positioned behind Nicole. The sisters always marched in birth order, surrounded by personal guards. As the days wore on, staring at her sister's backside, she vowed to herself she'd see Nicole burn, the one true weakness of a troll. The tower in the south was a long march through the wilderness. The main roads would have been faster, but Ida insisted on bypassing them whenever possible to avoid being spotted. Along the way, the soldiers supplemented their rations by hunting and gathering. One evening, when a hunting party returned, she was served the raw heart of a stag, an offering from Bakjos, the head of her personal guard. In the past, she would have thought it a special treat. Remembering the warm, cooked meals the dwarves ate, Lyra nearly threw up. Considering the fact she knew the soldiers were eating rations made from dwarf flesh, she had no issue with deer, other than wishing it were cooked, a strange, new fancy. Trolls rarely used fire, unless it was absolutely required, since it could cause long-lasting injuries if mishandled, though a bit of work at a forge was inevitable for the men. If they wanted meat to last, they salted it, instead of cooking. She felt fortunate the sisters were always offered their choice of the freshest meat, because it allowed her to avoid eating the most morally objectionable foods. In the back of her mind, as they traveled, Lyra worked on her estate plan. During an afternoon's march, Lyra asked Bakjos,
"Where are your loyalties?"
As he'd always done, the troll responded,
"To you, ma'am."
She leaned over to him and asked, in a whisper,
"And if you had to choose between myself and my sisters?"
"I would try and fail to kill Nicole if you asked. She's too fearsome to defeat, even for the greatest warrior, but I would hold her off, so you could escape."
He whispered back. Lyra quietly hummed a dwarf tune. Her guard picked up on it and hummed along. He had a bit of musical talent, which was one of the reasons she chose him. It made it easy to connect with him. She reached out to his mind for reassurance. She knew she would die for Lyra's sake, gladly, because she loved her. She would kill Ida and Nicole for her, if she could, or follow any order, no matter the danger. She hated Nicole for abusing Lyra and wanted to see her burn. Without a single word spoken, either aloud or in the telepathic song, Lyra quickly shared her plans with her brother, firmly planting them in his memory. Within the hour, he returned to hand her a piece of flint wrapped in a sheet of paper. In the coming days, he went missing during a hunt and was presumed dead. Thanks for listening. If you want more, please visit owentime.us, spelled owentyme.us. Credits. This audiobook was proudly made entirely with open source software on the Linux operating system, written using LibreOffice as a word processor. Audio script conversion and general Drudge work performed with Bash shell scripts written by Owen Time. Narrated by Piper, a text-to-speech synthesizer using the following models. Library TTS, which was trained on the SLR60 dataset, obtained from openslr.org, which is under the Creative Commons by 4.0 license. Unless otherwise noted, all character voices use this model. Mike, Jennifer, and John, the voices of the narrator, Nicole and Pavlos, respectively, were trained on recordings from LibriVox.org, which includes public domain recordings read from public domain books. These models were trained by Bryce Beatty, and the John model has been released on his website at brycebeatty.com, spelled BRYCEBEATTIE.COM. Voice quality of Labor TTS improved by our Noise, a neural network noise filter. Audio process using SOX, a command line tool for audio manipulation.